are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm glad we've finally gotten to connect. It's been a long time coming.
Yes, sure. I usually just see you on Twitter.
Yes.
Around 2-3 nocturnal habits.
Yeah, I am one of those night owls. Those are my prime working hours.
All right. I think a lot of developers and techies usually work during those hours. So it's pretty understandable.
Ah, okay. So I fit in. That's nice.
Sure. So I'd like us to start by you basically introducing yourself, because I've seen a lot of Chico on Twitter, mostly building in public. And I must say that is very bold of you. And I'll explain later. So maybe just start by introducing yourself.
Sure. So my name is Chico Wangombe, and I am a no-code builder as of this year. And what that means is I leverage no-code tools to build apps and platforms. It's like visual programming. You can think about it that way. What Frank has been talking about is building in public. I've been basically building an app for the past, what is it now, almost 6 months? And sharing all my learnings and things of that nature on my Twitter at Chico Wangombe. So it's all still very new to me, but it's been a lot of fun. And for my background, I'm like trained as a designer, technically trained as an architect. So it was a major pivot to get into the tech space, but I'm really happy where I am now.
Yeah, so I'd want to kick this off by maybe just talking about how I got to know about you. And it was through the On Deck Fellowship. I had been following them on Twitter for quite a while. And I kind of really admired whatever they were doing. So that's actually, I got to know about you. I was actually surprised to see that, you know, someone who is probably from the country that I'm in has been accepted on the fellowship, and they actually came out tops. So could you just take us through what On Deck Fellowship is about and how your experience was from the beginning and towards, you know, the conclusion?
Sure. That means going back to end of last year.
And all right.
That's end of last year. That's when I essentially really started getting into no code. I had started getting into no code with Webflow. Went to YouTube, watched a bunch of tutorials, and started learning how to build websites. I didn't know it was called no code then. I was just like, it's a cool way of like building stuff. Mm-hmm. I cannot actually tell you exactly how it happened, but I stumbled upon this guy called KP, who is now the program director of the On Deck No Code Fellowship, and I followed him. And I remember he tweeted about On Deck No Code, and I was just curious. It just piqued my interest because I was like, okay, I was starting to get into the no code space. I was starting to figure out what it actually meant. And so I was like, oh, okay. And it's a remote first thing because, you know, with COVID, everything is now remote first. So I was like, this looks really interesting. So I applied. I almost didn't. And I kind of talked, if you go on OnDeck's website, I kind of touched on that, I think, because they did a case study about me after the fact. But I was almost deterred because there was like a paid fee for it. But they were very generous to give me a scholarship. And so I was like, when I was applying, I was like, I have nothing to lose in just applying, and I will see if they'll be able to like help support the payment of it. So they were very kind and did that. And so I joined the fellowship. Now what it was a community of people who are creators or people who like to build things, or people who are interested in getting into building things. Because one thing that I've been is like, I've been sort of an ideas person for a really long time, just because I didn't have the skill set or the knowledge to know how to build things. And coding for me it didn't come very easy. I had tried learning coding before, like self-teaching, but it didn't quite click. So finding no code was amazing for me. And I was like, wow, I can actually build out my ideas, especially because I'm a designer first. It's it's a very great way for designers to actually bring their ideas to life. So OnDeck basically puts together all these different people. We get to, network and talk with each other, build relationships. There's a lot of internal support because there were people from different experience levels in the no-code space, and people have been there for years. Some people are just starting to experiment in it, like me. So there's a lot of mutual support and people kind of helping show other people how to do certain things. And as well as that, we had speakers from different parts who would talk to us about how they built their own businesses. Some of them are, very prominent names in Silicon Valley who've built companies or who have funded some of the biggest companies that we know. And so it was really great getting insights that you otherwise wouldn't really get anywhere else directly from these speakers and being able to engage with them. So overall, it was an amazing experience. I think I covered most of things.
Yeah, sure. That's actually very, very impressive. So how was your reaction when you realized that you had actually hacked it at the end of the fellowship? Because that should have been a very proud moment for you.
I was proud and I was super surprised. I was like, what? That was literally my first reaction. I was like, what? I don't know if that was captured on camera, but so I was very surprised. I was very humbled and very grateful. but honestly, I was also just thinking to myself, this is the product of so many people, in the sense that I had so much support to get to that point. Support within the OnDeck community, because like I said, I just started learning no code. I mean, the specific platform I was using, Bubble, I started learning it this year. And a lot of what I learned was because people were very gracious and generous with their time to show me how to fix issues and how to do certain things. Much as, a lot of it was self-taught, there was also a lot of support involved. So I was very grateful, but I was like, this belongs to everybody. And one thing I love about the community was people weren't really going into it with a competitive mindset. And even with the event itself, it was kind of portrayed more of a celebration of everyone's accomplishment to get to that point, because so many of us had just were new or hadn't even started building in public, et cetera. So it's a celebration of how we also have just changed as creators and builders. I was very grateful and very, very pleasantly surprised.
All right. So essentially your main takeaway from the OnDeck fellowship was, being able to build with no code, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So no code is a concept that has been around for quite a bit. I personally cannot code to save my life, honestly. So I'm thinking it's something that could save me if I decide to one day, just start to build something for myself. How has the experience been as a no-code builder? Do you think it's something that anyone can take up? Is there some sort of complexity that is there which you maybe might, you might find would be a bit more complicated for someone who doesn't have a tech background?
Right. That's a great question. one thing I love about the no-code space is that it's so vast and there's so many different platforms and applications to choose from in terms of what you want to build on top of. So for me, I started with Bubble. From my understanding of, the options that exist out there, Bubble is one of the harder ones, but it's also one of the most versatile in terms of it gives you flexibility of design, and you can do so much with it. But because there's so much in it in terms of the options of what you can do, it becomes a little challenging to learn. And it's also been challenging with its interface, et cetera, but Bubble has announced that they're changing that. So a lot of us are excited to see what they come up with. And hopefully that'll make it easier. But going back to your question about, can anyone pick it up I think yes. If you choose something harder like Bubble, there'll be a steeper learning curve. And that I think is across the board, regardless of who you are. But I think depending on the complexity of what you build, it could be really worthwhile. But there's also other applications like Glide apps, for example. I think Glide uses Google Sheets. If you know how to use like spreadsheets or Google Sheets, basically it can take any data that you put in a spreadsheet and just, you know, reformat it and present it in an app type of format. So you can build a lot of different apps. Literally, I think they pitch it as like you can build an app in 10 minutes, which some people have done. Okay. And you don't need tech skills. You don't need to learn any sort of complicated thing. It's very simple. It's, you know, it's got its limitations, of course, in terms of what you can do design-wise, but in terms of getting an app out there and getting users and testing out your idea, it's incredibly simple. It's incredibly easy to learn. And there's one fellow, she was called Vensi, and she ended up going to work at OnDeck after the fellowship or during the fellowship. But she built an app to solve the problem of like crowdsourcing medical equipment, things like oxygen tanks, et cetera, in Hyderabad. Because you know how India was going through like a really huge surge in terms of COVID cases. So she saw that problem. She, I think, built her app in Glide and launched it in like a matter of days, or maybe it was even less than a day. I can't remember the exact time frame, but it was very quick. Mm-hmm. And literally in days, she had like tens of thousands of users. And that's like the power of no code, because she didn't really have a background in no code, I don't think, before joining the fellowship. But now she's built an app and built a team behind the app and has helped so many people. So that kind of just illustrates the fact that like no code is open to anybody if you take the time to figure it out, and you can have huge impact.
All right, great. Do you think no code, the concept of no code is going to probably challenge, you know, conventional programming, or is there some sort of limitation that no code tools have, which, you know, you cannot compare to someone who's just gone through conventional programming courses?
I'll first start by saying I'm not a programmer, so I can't speak to all of the to the whole extent of what programmers can and can't do with code. There's a lot I'm sure that I don't know about. Right. What I will say is I don't think no code is a threat to coders or to programmers. I think in many ways they can actually serve as complements, because a lot of people might want to, if you're let's say trying to just have an MVP built, you might not necessarily need a coder or a programmer or an engineer, software engineer, to build that for you. You can build it yourself in a few minutes, put it out there, test the market. But with a lot of these things, it is it's been around a while, but like it's still in the grand scheme of things relatively new. So there'll come a point maybe when you're scaling, once you've validated your idea, that you will need to bring someone who has more technical expertise in and builds a much more complex a much more complex solution. And so I don't think it's a threat to people who are software engineers. I think they work together. What I will also say is I think one of the things that I'm seeing is a lot of, there have been some people who have come up kind of like appearing to be a little threatened by it on Twitter, because I feel like there's been pushback from some people who code and program, you know, like, oh, no code can't do this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. And I also I can also understand why someone might potentially feel threatened. But sure. I've also seen like some of the people who are like engineers who see this no code thing coming in terms of you know, it's growing, and they're like, okay, how can I use my skills to like help these people? Because because they do have valuable skills, and some of the, you know, I would say like the really smartest of them are just like building things that can help complement the no-code tools that are being built. So plugins that can help fill in the gaps or the limitations of apps like Bubble. There's engineers who are doing that, and, you know, they put it out there for maybe a couple of dollars and they make money. Or teaching people courses on how to do XYZ that can complement the no-code tool that they're learning. And so I think if you're a software engineer, it would be wiser to probably look at it as an opportunity. I think the no-code space is going to be really big. And if you can find a way to support it, you'll probably come out ahead.
All right. Yeah, so presently you're building PesaNote with yes. no-code, right? So yes. What is PesaNote? And so far, how's been the building experience so far? And also, just before I forget, when you left the OnDeck Fellowship, were you planning to build PesaNote? Was it an idea that you'd already cultivated and all you needed was just to scale, you know, just upscale so that you get able to go about it? Or was it something that came up after you had left the fellowship?
I'm not sure I understood the second part of the question. You're asking me about scaling? Like, was scaling a thought that came up after?
You're building PesaNote with no code. So in fact, I just asked two questions, but let me just break it down. Did you conceive the concept of PesaNote while you're still at the OnDeck Fellowship, or was it something that came up after the fellowship, you know, something that just simmered afterwards?
No. PesaNote, I started building it in, I think it was either late Jan, early Feb when I started building it in earnest. Mm-hmm. And so it came up during the fellowship. My plan when I joined the fellowship was to be able to build multiple apps, because I was like, okay, I basically wanted to build a portfolio of different things. Mm-hmm. And when you apply for the fellowship, or at least when I did, they ask you like what, if you have an idea for what you want to build. I don't think it's mandated, but if you have an idea, you present it. Mm-hmm. And that would be like your capstone. It's basically like a final project, I guess. And so my final project was not even a budgeting app. I had wanted to build something completely different. And I think it was in the second week of the fellowship, that was when I started learning Bubble. And I was like, okay, there's different ways to learn. You can learn by doing or learn by like watching and trying to understand the theory and of something. And for me, I was like, I want to learn by building something. And so I was like, what can I build that will also help me learn this platform? And so I thought, okay, what is a problem? Ultimately, you know, any digital tools that people create really should be solving a problem that people have. So I was like, what problem do I have that I could potentially build a solution for? And for me, that was keeping track of my spending. So I was like, okay, a budgeting app shouldn't be too hard. This was in January.
So essentially, PesaNote is a budgeting app, or is there other features that it has on top? Maybe if you could just describe PesaNote.
Sure. That's how it started, as a budgeting app. And really, it was even simpler than that. It was like, I want to be able to track my spending, especially on M-Pesa. Because with M-Pesa, it's really inconvenient if you want to take the information from, let's say, the text message receipts that you get and put it into a budget. I was like, surely there must be a better way. And this is also before Safaricom had released their own M-Pesa app, which I do know that they've done that since. And so it's basically evolved. It started as that simple. I was like, I want to track this and figure out a way of doing that. It expanded to include credit and debit cards. And I was like, it should be just like a full-fledged sort of budgeting tool. Or really, I don't know if budgeting is even the best term to describe it. It's more like tracking your spending. So that's currently what it does. It's built to help you log all of your expenses and categorize them, so you know how much you spend per category. Let's say how much you spend on fuel, on food, on groceries, things like that. Mm-hmm. But again, it's been growing. And in terms of the idea, that it's been morphing and it's becoming bigger than I had thought.
So you've done a lot of iterations. Do you have a vision so far? Because I know when you're building from scratch, there's always new ideas coming up, and you keep reading up stuff and you realize, no, I need to cut out on this. Do you have a blurred vision of what a Pesanote should be at the end when you're launching?
When I'm launching, the way I was honestly expecting to have launched way before. Actually, I did do a launch and I had people who used it and tested it. And then I realized it still needs a lot of work. But just for the fellowship itself, I had to, you know, have something to show. And so I did launch, I guess, the first beta. I don't even know what to call it at this point, but I'll call it that, the first beta. It's since morphed, and I have a vision in the sense of I haven't thought about it very long term. I have short term vision for it because I still don't know if this will become its own whole thing. Not to say I don't want it to, but again, this started as a project for me, so it's been growing as we go. But I would love for it to be something that can automate the process for you of keeping track of certain spending and certain of your transactions, your personal transactions. And if I can find a way to automate the process, taking information from your M-Pesa, potentially even from your spending of your card, that would be what I'd love to do and help people basically make better decisions with how they spend their money. Because if you don't know where your money is going, you can't really, you know, cultivate good personal finance habits.
Yeah. I'd really want to test out Pesanote once it's out. I'm just scared of, coming to terms with how much I spend on different things and whatnot. It's very scary. And I also, I've seen people talk, I have had a lot of people talking about this, like, you know, for example, how M-Pesa is so effective, I'd say, and it's very easy to spend, you know, once you start spending, you just go on and on, because you'll find a till number any other place that you go. So it's going to be a bit scary to realize or come to terms with your spending habits, but I guess it's something that is really necessary, which will come in handy for a lot of people to enable them, you know, make the right financial decisions when it comes to their daily spending habits.
Exactly. I get that feeling of it being scary. Scary for you to discover one day that you're broke and you don't know where your money went, because I've had those moments and I'm like, that to me is a bit more scary than at least knowing in advance and being able to be like, okay, I tend to spend a lot of money on fuel, let's say, and I don't need to spend this much because now I know, and I can, eventually this is also something that I'm hoping the app can help do, is project your spending based off of what you've spent in past months. And so you can see, like, if you're spending like 5,000 a month on fuel, you're like, but that's 60K a year. How can I shift that? Because that's a lot of money.
Sure.
Maybe a couple of days I can take public transport, or like figure out ways of like modifying your life so you can actually save that money. And I think that would be something that people would value. I know I would.
Sure. They'd appreciate to have that. So this next thing I want us to talk about is something that really scares me. And I am really awed by the fact that you've taken this very bold step, building in public. You basically, is it what made you decide to build in public? Was it the fact that, you know, you could be accountable to the people who follow your project or follow you? Or was it out of, you know, just trying out just trying out your skill and proving that, you know what, when you commit to this, you're gonna have to push it to the end?
I think, first of all, I will start by saying it's not something that was natural for me. Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things, I think, one of the wonderful byproducts of being part of the fellowship and part of a community where people are generally doing this as a matter of course. Because mm-hmm. I've done like things in the past where I was scared to build in public, scared to even share what I'm doing.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
I just do something in my own solitude. And then like, if nobody knows, like, it's probably not going to go very far. I've had that experience. Something that it's so funny because it seems very counterintuitive, but I have only experienced good things from mm-hmm. building in public. And okay. one of the things that I think people are most scared about is the potential of someone stealing your idea, let's say. While I will say this building in public sort of philosophy might not apply for every single idea or application, because some may have like proprietary tech or something of that nature, I don't even know. Mm-hmm. But most ideas probably don't. So building in public has helped me connect with people.
Mm.
And I can talk about that in multiple points. Like, one, being able to connect with other people in the no-code community has been mainly due to building in public. And for me, my platform of choice has been Twitter, because that's where I know a lot of people in the space gather virtually.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, even for example, my Twitter following, it's not huge, but this time, I think last year I had like maybe 400 followers. That's about 1200. And a lot of those people are people that I'm actually like building relationships with and I'm having conversations with and I'm learning from, and they're also teaching me. So that's one. Two, I've had people reach out to me with potential job opportunities. Funnily enough,
That's very interesting.
Yeah. And it's so funny because like in some ways, when you think about it, it also makes sense because my timeline in some sense has become like my resume. Like, rather than tell you I can do X, Y, Z, you go to my Twitter and you see what I can do because I've shared it. Sure. And so I've had different people reach out to me. In fact, funnily enough, and I haven't actually shared this with publicly on my Twitter, but I started a new job yesterday, and that was through someone that found me on Twitter because of all of this. So that's one.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And then the third thing, I think two more points. The third thing is people within the space. For example, I've connected with founders who are interested in and even some potential like venture capitalists, but mainly founders is what I want to focus on. Like today, right before we started this conversation, I had another call with another founder who's funnily enough building a very similar tool. And we just talked about it. And he told me the things he has tried, the experiments they have run, where they've failed, where they've succeeded. I told him about my idea and what direction I wanted to take. He kind of helped me by telling me some of the things that they have tried and failed. So I'm in a better position to know what experiments to run. That wouldn't have happened if I hadn't been sharing, because the person who connected me to this founder found me on Twitter. Mm-hmm. This founder themselves, they're not on Twitter. But that conversation that we had today has been incredibly valuable to me. And his openness and willingness to help has also been just amazing to see. And the last point I will say, and this is the thing that people are most afraid of, is like people's biggest fear with building in public, I think, is the idea that their idea will be stolen. It's hard. I think if you think that you underestimate how hard it is to build an app, how hard it is to build a business and to actually bring something into life. Like, I would be very impressed if someone could just take all the things and just steal it and run with it. I'd be like, okay, that's impressive. Do you want, it's very hard for me. The learning process has taken time. Mm-hmm. And so I think for me, weighing everything, I would say I got way more from building in public than I lost. I don't even think I've really lost anything, but what I've gained has been amazing. And the opportunities that have come, the doors that are opening, the relationships, many of which I don't know how they're going to play out in the future, but it's great to have met people literally from all over the world and had conversations and one-on-ones, kind of like how we connected. I think we also connected because of Twitter.
Sure.
If I wasn't building in public, you wouldn't have found me, or you wouldn't have known like how to find me or people like you.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
In fact, I wanted to add one more point. The fear of, or the risk of failure, is that something that has bothered you or something that bothers you?
I think that's a very real fear. And I should have added that too. So that's a good point. The fear of failure is very real. But what I feel is, one, a lot of the people within the specific community, I mean, I'm not trying to say all of Twitter is like this, because there's some sides of Twitter that are a war zone. So don't just assume everyone there is friendly.
Of course.
But one, people are generally very supportive, and it's like they want you to succeed. And that's why even people are willing to help you, et cetera, and so on and so forth. Two, a lot of people who've tried to start things have probably failed at some point in their life, and understand that, and don't judge it the same way we judge it in our minds so harshly. And I think there's people have more respect for the effort than they do for the fact that you have failed, quote unquote, whatever failure means to you. And so number three, what was the third one? My mind's just blank. So let's just go with those two. So failure is a very real fear. I get it. For me, now this is just a point specific to me.
Okay.
I think my fear of failure wasn't as strong purely from the fact that this entire experience, I was looking at it as a learning experience. Meaning, and I guess that the fact that I had a different motivation made me not experience the fear. Meaning, I'm not out here trying to, my initial goal when I started was not like, I'm going to start this thing, I'm going to build this business, and I'm going to scale it, and it's going to be worth millions or hundreds of millions or billions of dollars. Like that was not my mindset, you know? For me, I was like, I literally, to the very simple, the simplest way I can explain it, I have a problem. I want to solve it. And I'm going to build this thing for me. So in as far as my measure of success or failure, if I build an app and it works and it's something that I use and it helps my life. And by the way, I'm not saying apply the same logic for everything, but I'm just talking about in this specific context. For me, that was the bar. Like I was just like, I'm solving a problem for myself. One, I've also taught myself an incredibly valuable skill and I've built great relationships. So whatever happens, I've succeeded in my mind. But if I can actually build something, send it out into the world, whether or not people use it, I know me, I'll use it because it's important to me. So if it's done, if it works and if I use it and if it changes my life, I have succeeded. Everything else has been like an incredible bonus.
You're going to be your first user, and that's a big plus. You know, as long as your product has a user, even if it's you, that's good. So you can, all you have to do is now, you know, just extend it to other people who might be interested, which actually brings me to my final point. Do you think building in public has changed how Personot has been marketed, or it has accelerated the marketing of the product even before it's ready? And therefore, you know, you have a lot of confidence that by the time you launch, you will have already created a community of followers who are, you know, basically just looking forward to test out the product or just adopt it once it's ready for market.
I think my answer is yes and no. You can build in public and you can grow an audience, but not everyone in your audience will be your target person, user, and not everyone will even be willing to try. And it depends on how you've gone about building in public, because one of the things that, and I'm very conscious of this, by the way, so that's why I'm like, even if there's still a possibility that maybe 10 people maximum will use this. But for me, with building in public, one of the things that I've also been doing is, you know, doing threads, kind of highlighting like how I did things. So a lot of the people who are following me, it's not necessarily that they care so much about the budgeting app, but some do, some genuinely do and have expressed interest in using. But they care about the fact that I've learned this skill and I'm sharing about it and what I'm sharing has value and they want to learn too. And so I don't presume like of the, I guess, 1,000 or so new people who have followed me, all of them are going to use my app. Because I'm conscious of the fact that people are following, of the different reasons why people are following me. But I will say it has definitely increased the number of potential users and potential people who would be interested in testing out the app. Because if I was doing this privately, I wouldn't even know where to start when it comes to marketing. Some of the people who may have seen it, even if they're not necessarily gonna be my users, because I've you know, cultivated relationships with them and we've talked, etc. Even if they're not my users, they could help me amplify my message. They can help me get more reach, you know. So I could potentially meet reach other people who would be my users with their support. It's not a guarantee, and I don't go into relationships with that expectation, but that's a possibility. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So for me, there's no downside.
Have some of the iterations, you know, the multiple iterations that you've had while building, have some of them come from the community or your followers, you know, someone saying, okay, could you have this feature added, or how do you expect to implement this, that sort of thing?
I would say I have talked to a couple of people and showed a couple of people the app before. The current iteration is so far ahead from where I started, like when I launched for the fellowship. So again, I don't necessarily, you know, pose very specific questions about the app to my community, because not everyone is my target. I have people from the US and Europe and Asia following me, and they might not necessarily have the same problems or needs. For example, they don't use things like M-Pesa, et cetera, which was one of my primary motivations, you know, of building this. So I don't necessarily ask the community as a whole. I do ask people who I know here, people who have tested other previous iterations of the app. Like, what do you think? Where was there a friction point in the app, or what feature do you think is missing that you would find helpful? Or sometimes they just tell me, you know, they're like, this part was really difficult. I don't know why you have this in the app. This doesn't make sense. Sometimes it can be very hurtful. Not hurtful in like they're trying to hurt you, but it can be harsh. That's what I was saying. So you have to be like, okay, it's not personal. They're communicating a frustration the same way, you know, anyone who is a customer of any business will communicate a frustration. They're looking at it as a business, not as a personal thing to you as an individual. But I've talked to people locally who are really my target users to get a better understanding of, is this going in the right direction? Would you use this? Is it solving your problem too? Because if it doesn't, then that kind of defeats the purpose.
All right. Thank you very much, Chico. Where do we find you? Twitter? Can we also find Pesanet on Twitter?
Yes. So I am on Twitter as Chico Wangombe. Chico spelled S-H-I-K-U. Wangombe, just one word. And Pesanet, I recently launched its own profile on Twitter as well. And it's just the way it sounds, Pesa. P-E-S-A, note, N-O-T-E, one word. And you can follow the journey there. I'll probably be building in public on both of them, but trying to do a bit more on Pesanet specifically leading up to the launch. So it should be interesting.
All right. Thank you very much, Chico, for coming on. We'll catch up with you soon.
I appreciate it. This was fun. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
All right. I really appreciate it too. Have a good one.
You too.
Okay, bye.